And recording is go. So, here we are. The art of calling forth genius. Interesting word, genius. So this is where we're going today. This is a little inquiry that I have here called Who Are You Now? We're going to be playing a little bit with illuminating awareness. We're going to look at where we view greatness from, where people view greatness from, attributes of greatness, and potentially engaging with the frictors to greatness, and then checking in to see what you're up to. So here's our opening question. And this, for you know, for those of you who can't see it, is a butterfly emerging from a chrysalis, you know, from the larva stage. And so this is what I'm curious about, any one or all of these three, but in particular, any one of these for you. What is emerging as you engage with each session? Meaning, what's coming forth from you? Not what are you learning, acquiring, like information that you're going to store in the computer brain area, but what's coming forth from you? Who is it within you that is still being held back? And what needs to move, shift, transform, or be relinquished in order for your greatness to be ever present? So I'd like to hear from you all and as many of you as would like to speak, and then just find out what are some of the responses you have to those three questions.
Oh, this is Margie. I'll go ahead and start.
Okay.
I think what's emerging, really, is really embracing the trying to think how to say it, the sort of the more of the presence of whatever comes up is the right thing at the right time, the way it's supposed to be.
So with that, what's happening is that the ego self is, whatever vestige was still hanging out there, has to get out of the way in order for that to be happening. Which, in a funny way, while I say kudos to you, I want to say kudos to the, I guess you might call it larger self, enlightened self, that is letting go of whatever the importance about who it was that had it have to be a particular way. Because it's that person, that aspect of yourself, that's being relinquished. And now this puts you in much more flow with what is and where things are going and where things are coming from. And it makes it more in alignment and more attuned. And so I hear presence emerging. And as it always will be flavored with the essence of you, however it emerges. So good job. Who else? What of those three questions is calling to you to share about? What is emerging as you engage? Who is it within you that's still being held back? What needs to move, shift, transform, or be relinquished in order for your greatness to be ever present?
This is BJ. I'll go. I started to go, and I found I was on mute, and that didn't work too well. So
I just tried leaving the class on mute. That doesn't work too well either.
So what I'm noticing, it's the presence and the dance of the being in the dance of presence. And the thing that came to me out of last week was that being in the fullness of my being. And so then I came to, what the heck is that? What's fullness of being? What's, you know? And so the experience actually that I had with you this week, Michael, even though there weren't very many words about it, was around that feeling. So that's what I've been coming to, is that place of experiencing the fullness of my being present.
Mm-hmm. And the way you put that, I really want to take note of, is that you're experiencing the fullness of it. Because for all of us, with all of these things, as in all of the respectful assumptions, it's actually already there. There is a fullness of being in all of us. There is a fullness of presence in all of us. And the challenge isn't whether or not we can get full or strengthen our fullness. The challenge is whether or not we are in a place where we can experience that which is already there. That fullness already exists.
Right.
And so what we play the game of is we play the game of subtracting those things that keep us from the experience, not from being full, because you already are full, but from experiencing that fullness and then living, acting, you know, whatever you want to call it, from there.
Right.
Yeah. Big difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind
of
people
and
say,
I find that coming up in conversations a lot more, that word experience.
Mm-hmm.
And how that resonates, not only with me, because I'm like, oh, that's what it is, but also with whether it's friends I'm having some conversations about on this level, or students or clients. It's that piece of experiencing that, you know, you can just see that they kind of have this being taken back, being blown back by that word, like I was too. It's like, oh, that's what it is. It's the experience of it. Uh-huh.
Yes. Because no one really wants the menu, the descriptions of the food. They want the experience of the food.
Right.
You know, it may be useful for people to have the spreadsheet of the cash flow from an intellectual point of view, but what they really want is they want to experience their company and the state that that creates when they're experiencing the cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want. It's less about people saying, I want to be confident, than experiencing their confidence. And just like a lot of people who are trying to get to enlightenment or oneness or whatever you want to call it, it's already there. And that's why that kind of Tao thing about, you know, it's very hard to – it's not a place to get to arrive at. It's because it's actually already there. The only thing that is missing is the experience of it. And so when you talk to a client and you're looking at, you know, when they're talking about their creativity or their imagination or their sense of self, it isn't that it isn't there. They're just not experiencing it. They're not experiencing themselves as creative. And so we tend to shortcut the language and go, I'm not creative. No, you are creative. It's built in. Are you experiencing it and then using or expressing that? That's a different question. You know, everyone on this call is brilliant, has genius. Are you experiencing it and therefore living from it and expressing it and applying it in its fullness? That's a different question. Is it there? Yes. Do we understand all of its forms and its expressions? No. Are they there? Yes. Thanks, BJ. That was good. The language around that is a good prompt. Who else? Anyone else want to share at this point?
Well,
shall we dive in? Go ahead, Bert.
I seem to be experiencing presence and being connected, which just sort of automatically gives me this heightened awareness. more often than not. And the result of that is I don't seem to have to work or think about fictors.
Good for you. Yes, when you're connected and experiencing presence, you're right. It does. heightened awareness automatically kicks in. Now, for those people for whom it's a challenge to be able to connect and experience, it could be that there's a frictor in the way. And the value is in subtracting those so that they can get the experience. Once they get the experience, the heightened awareness, as you said, it's already hanging out. Nice. So, anyone else? What's emerging, or who is it that's still being held back in you? Or what needs to move, shift, transform, or be relinquished in order for your greatness to be ever present? Are we good for now? Okay, let's rock. Illuminating awareness. Now, I know in the ICF they talk about it creating awareness, and I always had a problem with that because it wasn't how I experienced it. It was about illuminating awareness. It was a perfect segue just from what Bert was talking about, which is awareness is already there. You don't have to make it be there. You don't have to create awareness in another human being. It's almost artificial to assume that you're doing that. You might help generate an aha moment, but that doesn't necessarily translate into awareness. That may translate into an insight, a kind of intellectual leap at times, a connect the dots moment. Oh, yeah, I see how that, oh, yeah. Now, one could call that awareness, but that's not what we're really talking about. So the game is subtracting that which obscures awareness. If we make the assumption it's already there, then what's in the way of us experiencing that? Illuminating awareness is the experiencing of the fullness of self. It's always present and often obscured. And having the awareness, this particular agility is about having the awareness of what is appropriate in the moment with respect to action, waiting, reflection, either self or being reflected back by someone, what is not yet seen, who it is that's really there, and what is calling to be called forth from someone. That's what this agility is about. This is where people typically view what the word greatness gets associated to. The small view, which is there's some sort of large level of financial success, love success, material objects, fame, you know, monuments, all that sort of stuff, impact in the world, he's a great man, he touched all these people, reach of influence, et cetera, power. And that would mean that if we were to follow that small view of it, that it's based in comparison, meaning this person versus another person. This person did great things, that one did not. It also means that that greatness is available for only a very few who have those kind of significant demonstrations of it, which has us go over to the historical view of greatness, which is, you know, sometimes people succeed or fail at agreements and goals and conversations and having a being a good person and telling the truth, keeping my word, my to-do list is complete. Okay? So, greatness doesn't live there. That's an external measurement, which means that same measurement is fleeting. There's a wonderful poem called Ozymandias. Ozymandias. I don't remember the author of it. It's not Blake, but it's in that realm. Ozymandias. And at a certain point in it, it's about a king, a great king, okay? And at one point, the author takes over and says, the line is, "I am Ozymandias, king of kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair." And what's being pointed to around that is that all of these great cities and monuments and everything that were part of his realm are now covered with sand and not able to be seen. They're gone. And it points to that if one is going to measure the greatness of it, that greatness in that way, in an external reference point, it may look like it lasts, but in the scheme of human time, there are things that were quote-unquote great accomplishments that have disappeared off the radar. And greatness is also like beauty in the eye of the beholder. So let's take a look at greatness. This is where we tend to look at it from. Internal view, what we think about ourselves, and an external view, what others think about us, either putting us down or putting us on a pedestal. Because when you realize it, anything that has been ever, when you really take a look at it, if we dismiss the notion that any accomplishment is any single person's accomplishment, that it's actually a collective endeavor, and then if you take it in terms of intellectual property or creation like that, now anything that really comes through somebody is while they may be the shepherd of it or the steward of the content, you know, he's a great writer. The writing comes through them and is as much simultaneously a compilation of every piece of input that's ever put into that person over the entire course of time. So we tend to try and lock it into a person and measure it somehow. And for me, in the purposes that I've seen, greatness is self-defined. Only your definition matters. It's self-attuned. It resonates with the essence of you, what you're built for, and how you've been shaped by the forces of the universe. It's self-expressed, which is how it shows itself in form, style, actions, and the locus of attention, meaning where it's being expressed. And it's self-contributed. It lives in the recognition that you, yourself, and who you are and become are your contribution to the world. So I don't measure whether or not there is greatness in any one of you by any single accomplishment. I assume it's there. And it may not be fully defined, attuned, expressed, and contributed as of yet. And it may have been already. Here's some of the frictors on this slide, the frictors to greatness. Fear that
Michael,
if one true... Yep.
Michael, do you go back?
Yep.
For that slide?
Yeah. Go for it.
So I had written something down earlier, and somehow you got right to it. This a fear, apparently, of mine lives in the fourth one, and that is that, you know, what I become and all that kind of stuff won't be at the level of contribution to the world.
Hmm.
I won't make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much to do and too much to, you know, and so forth. But so this fourth one there just nailed me in terms of something I'd already written down. That was sort of one of my fears. Now, you've said it differently here, but it just points right to it for me. Can you comment about that?
Yeah. Because there's a difference between your contribution to the world and other people's recognition or the world's noticing the contribution. And we tend to measure by what the world notices rather than whether or not the contribution is present. And when the world doesn't notice to the scope, size, range, and reach that we think is part of the definition, it therefore equates with there is no contribution. But I invite you to play, anybody who has this question going on, I invite you to play the It's a Wonderful Life game. This game is for you to spend some time in reflection over the course of your life, using whatever prompts you want to, you know, like diaries, you know, scrapbooks, you know, pictures, things like that of the past, or however you want to revisit it, and go through your life and see if you can imagine what the world and people's lives would have been like if you had not been there, with some small action, with some gesture of kindness, with some particularly sharp moment in time, with whatever it was. Take a look at what would be, what would not be here. And I mean in a genuine way, what would not be here would not have occurred had you not been here. The people's lives, and if you need to revisit the Jimmy Stewart movie to do that, then do it, because it points out some excellent examples.
You know, there's also all those places where we have no idea that one little thing that we said or did made a huge impact, because I've had that happen to me where, you know, I know that this person had no idea that that one piece of information they gave me shifted my life in a direction that's had long-lasting impact and then has a ripple effect in a lot of ways. So,
yes,
you know, there's a lot of unseen or unnoticed, I think, contributions.
Absolutely. And think about that. That's a great part of the exercise, BJ, to add that into it. Think of it for your life, for your own life, wherein someone has said some small thing, done some small thing, something that might not have seemed significant to them, but for you, it was huge. And as a sidebar, this is actually one of the things that I talk about in presentations when I'm working with people doing presenting, is that we cannot, and even in coaching, we cannot afford to assume that we know exactly all of the ramifications of some of the most minor things that we have said or done. I've had people call me years later and say, you know that conversation about that? And I barely remember it. But it's still a pivotal moment in their life. And I go, wow, I had no idea. It was the most ordinary conversation to me.
Mm-hmm.
But for them, in the context of their being, what they're facing, it was enormous. And so what this fourth one, Bert, in particular, is pointing to is that your presence matters. And everything that you do that you act out of that has an impact. Everything. And your contribution in the world, while it may not go on the cover of Time magazine, has been enormous already. Because in a world of interconnectedness, there is no thing you do that contributes to someone that doesn't then ripple through them into other people through how they interact. Every leader you've helped shift how they interact with their employees, that has created a ripple effect not only through those employees for that particular period of time, but everyone they come in contact with, and including and especially their families. And so it is an exponential recognition that I'm calling for here.
And Bert, I don't know. I know for me, this I've been redefining what success means. That has been one of the things that I've been pondering and sitting with.
And that's a brilliant exercise, because what you're asking is, what does success mean to me?
Right.
Outside of anyone else's definition, what does it really mean to me? And that automatically puts you on the path to satisfaction, but more importantly, fulfillment. I want to go back just to the top of the call and bring that part back around here, which is, what may be missing for most is that they don't experience their contribution in the world. Not that it isn't there. It's that they don't experience it in its fullness. I mean, how can I know what has been translated and rippled down through, you know, I mean, there's going to be people who have gotten something out of some particular call or interaction or whatever it was in my life, and I have no idea where the chain of that goes.
So, Michael, there's a quote from Oprah Winfrey. I'm wondering if this works.
Go ahead.
The key to realizing a dream is to focus not on success, but significance. And then even the small steps and little victories along your path will take on greater meaning.
That's nice. That's nice. And what I would add to that is experiencing, if it's possible, experiencing the significance with other people. I want to share with you just briefly before we move on my 60th birthday, on the advent of my 60th birthday, for whatever reason, on a walk, I became acutely aware of how many people had contributed to the fact that I had arrived at that August date, right? Not August date, but August. And one of the things that I was really, it profoundly touched me how many people had contributed to my life. The numbers, it's huge, either directly or indirectly. And being in the fullness of that experience, I went to my wife and I said, this is what I want to do for my 60th, because she had asked me, what do you want to do for your, how do you want to make it special? How do you want to make it special? And I said, this is how I want to make it special. I said, you know, I want to invite a bunch of people over that we know, and I want to thank them for their contribution to me making it to 60. And the interesting thing about that is that, you know, while I was there, and there was some, I don't know, 12, 15 people sitting here on a summer's eve, and we're sitting there, and I went around with each of them, and then one person said, you know what, and I want to ask everybody here how you've contributed to them. And they went around, and it was a revelation for me. Some of the oddest, strangest things came out of people's mouths, and things I would never have expected. You know, in the same way that many years ago, as I reported with the rock bands, what was really truly important to the leader of the band was my belief in them. So it's not where we look. We're not looking in the place where it lives, because we're looking from our societally driven measurements. It lives in experiencing others and what's happened for them and how their lives are different. And each one of you on this call has had profound impact on people. And at times, it may have felt like you've had no impact at all. But what I want to say to you is that you have no frickin' clue what's really happened, because you do not live inside that other person. See, the thing is, when it gets down to it, because you live and engage with other people in the world, you can't not contribute. Your very presence contributes, and then the actions that are born out of that presence contribute. And there is greatness in all of you in the desire to hone that, to have the intention of it, taking it even further, to be in the service of that. In whatever way, shape, and form is congruent with what you've been built for and shaped for. So does this kind of come around for you, Bert?
Indeed. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm glad you had us go back. You see, that, and this is a perfect example of it, that mere, so to speak, moment of having us go back because there was something unsettled in you and there was a question that you had and you wanted to and you wanted to have some more clarity about it. Look at everything that was said out of that action that would not have been said had you not been true to yourself in that moment and said, can we go back and talk about that last one? That's an example. Okay, moving on. So, fritters to greatness. Fear that if one shines truly out in the world that others won't like it. We have that one all over the place. You know, there's that Nelson Mandela quote, sometimes attributed to Marianne Williamson, sometimes the other way. I don't really know who sourced it, but nevertheless, you know, the one about who are we to not be great. We actually are already. But there are a lot of people who, when they get when they shine, people see it as something that individually attacks them, and so they attack it. Because the minute you shine, anyone who is also not shining has one or two choices. They can go, wow, I think I want to get there and shine as well. Or they can go, oh, I'm not playing up to my full potential, but I don't want to. It's too uncomfortable. Let me drag them down so that we can all play in mediocrity together. And that's why people take pot shots at people who really tend to shine brilliantly. The next frictor is denial. And that denial is that greatness exists inside oneself. It's as if somebody else has it, but I don't. I somehow, on the greatness line, when it was being handed out, I don't have it. I don't know why. I'm flawed in that way. There's something wrong with me. Everybody else has it, but I don't. And I would say you just don't perceive or experience the nature of your greatness. The kind of greatness it is. You just don't see it for what it is. We keep tending to go back to the comparison thing like, well, but I haven't built a monument, or I haven't made some huge financial success, or I haven't donated a kidney to somebody, or I haven't saved a village in Rwanda, or I haven't created or invented some vaccine that saved the world, or made some invention that made everybody's lives easier. You know, we tend to compare ourselves with the external expressions of it. And then we go, ah, well, they have it, I don't. And the frictor is right there, the ignorance of the nature of the potential greatness within you. And as I just talked about, the illusions of what greatness is and isn't supposed to look like. And then we have an attachment. My ordinariness is who I am. No, it isn't. But imagine how it would be if we lived our life out of that. We would never reach, stretch, try to grow for anything. We would just be almost at the opposite end of the spectrum, overly humble. Not that humility is a bad thing. It's an intellectually behavioral construction or strategy designed to keep from getting hooked by one's ego. Essentially, humility is a creative workaround. I prefer reality. You know, if you can do it, you can do it. No point in attempting to be humble or playing it down. If you can do it, and it comes through you, you can do it. But some people are attached to their ordinariness, their almost Eeyore moment of, well, I'm just a jackass. I'm just a plain old four-legged creature. I don't have anything unique about me. So these are worth subtracting in both yourselves and in others, and especially in yourself if these are at play. Because you won't be able to shine as the model. And this, more importantly, not just the model, but the space of allowing. The space of allowing others to be fully great because you're an example that says it's okay to be in your greatness. And they go, oh, let me imitate that. Once again, the tools for subtraction. Let's see if there's a demo available. The elixir of greatness. That's what we're looking to have you swallow today, so to speak. And here's what to remember. And then let's see where this call takes us. Remember always, the client is already on a golden path to greatness expressed, simply waiting to have it called forth and endorsed for its presence. So, let me find out where all of this has taken you all at this moment in time, and then let's see what the moment calls for. And I'd like to hear from everyone.
I'll start. It's interesting. Yesterday, I came back to reading that Marianne Williamson poem. It just was really just in my own process. It's like, oh, I know that's there, and it's important to read. And it's like each time I read it, I can read it anew in a way. And it's also fun to read it. Spoken in our, you know, we language, to say it in I language can be really, it helps me too. So just, I think it's a great poem and reminder. The other piece that I've been feeling into today in this call is being in that, I don't know if it's paradox or double space, but it's like, being in the, you know, being part of the all, it's like there's a real smallness. There is a smallness to it because compared to the whole universe, you know, and all of time, you know, I'm like a little itty bitty teeny weeny drop. And this is what I have. So it's like being the greatness and recognizing in some ways insignificance at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And you're familiar with the Blake poem that has to behold the universe in a grain of sand.
Mm-hmm.
that everything, even a grain of sand, while potentially insignificant in size, is significant in presence. And a paradox is appropriately named there. Yet the recognition that comes from Neil deGrasse Tyson, the scientist, physicist, that he's often been stating that one of the most significant things about us all is that we are all the stuff that stars are made of.
Mm-hmm.
We're made from the same stuff. So we're not separate from, despite whatever our perceptual qualities indicate. A nice paradox. Who's next? How has this presentation around greatness and calling forth greatness landed with you?
Margie.
I
think what's really coming up for me right now is that the greatness is neither big or small. It's neither at a grand
mm-hmm.
scale or a small scale. It just is.
Mm-hmm. Nice way to put that.
And I think, as I look at this, about the client, most of the time always feel that the client is definitely on a path to greatness, that the potential that everybody has is amazing. I might not embrace that in myself as much as I'm aware that I probably could.
What would it change if you did?
Probably just more acceptance and more peace. And
so it's a question that's prompted by this, and then I'd like to hear from other people, is what story would you have to stop telling yourselves about you if you perceived the greatness and experienced the greatness that is already there in you? What story would you have to stop telling yourself?
It's almost what's coming up for me is that whatever being strived for is already there.
Mm. Okay. kind of like that picture a few slides ago where the cat was looking in the mirror and saw the lion. Yes, Bert.
Well, in the business world, greatness is immeasurably stuck in measures. Everything.
Yes.
Measures of greatness, everything. And,
yep.
And which goes back to the challenge of working on the what versus working on the who. But a lot of times, the who's not very accessible in the sea of what's that need to be adjusted in order for the measures of greatness to get to a point where they'll listen to the who.
I'm with you.
So did you follow that?
Yeah.
Okay. So to me, that's because I've been working on the what for years. And just recently been much more engaged on the who with the client owners and so forth, which has been great. And it's just worked out quite well. But the reality of the business world is, it's like you never get to this last slide. Very difficult to get to that last slide and even have that kind of a conversation with someone who can't make payroll or with someone whose cash flow is terrible or with someone who blah, 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 because they're all stuck in their lack of greatness for all the measures.
Right. The lack of, and partially, ironically, it is that they are attached to those external measures of greatness that doesn't allow them to experience or perceive and therefore tap and leverage their own greatness, which might actually have affected and changed those external measures of greatness.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think in my world, that's a challenging place to get to most of the time.
Yes, it is. So one has to, at times, ease into the conversation of the who. Even if one makes descriptions about it, saying, you know what, you could take the same actions for your company, and if the who that's taking those actions is unethical versus the who is an ethical person, those actions are going to be taken in different ways and have different results. And so you start to give them things that are going to be meaningful in terms of how the conversation goes about what it is that they're doing. And that every action that they're taking on a what is born from a who place, and it is not only valuable but powerful to have an awareness of the who that is taking the what action. Because if the who is unconscious taking the what action, many of the actions they're taking may well be self-defeating or not optimal because the who that's taking them is off-center. And they may look at the actions, but it all still comes back to who's taking the action. So, yes, in the business world, one does have to ease into it. And yet, I can tell you from my experiences working with people in Cisco and Ford and GM and some other companies and Blizzard and things like that, that there are people who are open to the conversation in very high places of power within those organizations. I mean, if I go in and I've wound up in the past, I've done a leadership training and development with some people who are director level in a global organization, and we're having conversations about their six-word memoir, the six words that if they were to put it down to six words, that this would be what they were really about, the essence of themselves that they would want put on a tombstone. A six-word memoir exercise, which is actually how I came up with the book title and the presentation title, Be Yourself or Die Someone Else. you'd be surprised at the things that they came up with. This was in a leadership development exercise. And they sat there, and it prompted a lot of reflection. That whole recognition of not just how do you want to be remembered, but what is the essence of you that you want remembered? And it's important that it's in six words. I don't know why. Because people really have to dig deep, I guess, to get it in six words. You know, if they were going to leave a message to the universe that is the essence of them and their epitaph at the same time, what is it? So I agree with you, Bert. The conversation, that kind of conversation is challenging, but you're already experiencing results. Yeah?
Well, it's true, because there's no question.
Yeah. So which means you get to now
apparently I'm easing into it in my own clumsy way already.
Yeah. But you'll be able to now have a track record of those kinds of results and the value of that kind of interaction after a certain point in time. And then you'll be able to say, you know what? These are the kinds of conversations I have. Yes, we're going to address the what, because the what's always important. It's part of what feeds us, you know. But where we're going to start is the who, because that's what creates the what. And they may go, well, what do you mean? There's some touchy-feely crap. And you go, I don't know. Call this guy I worked with, and you tell him, you ask him how it was different for him. And you'll have those reports. So who else? What's going on out there out of this whole presenting? What story would you have to let go of if you actually perceived and experienced your greatness? What story that you've been perpetuating about you would no longer be a viable conversation out of your mouth?
Well, for me, I think that as I have been really redefining success for myself, it allows for me to be able to have some awareness of the greatness component for myself.
You know, the stories that we tell about ourselves have limited language. They have a language of diminishment in them. The language that says, oh, I'm just a coach. Who am I to blah, 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 blah. Who am I to write a book? I don't have, nobody's going to want to read what I have to say. We diminish. Sometimes out of fear that we will be perceived as arrogant if we actually own our greatness. But the interesting thing about owning your greatness is that you actually don't have to speak about it. You simply need to live from it. Let others speak about it. And no one on this call is ordinary. Except through perhaps your own historical eyes, which at some point were actually not even your eyes, because when you came into the world, You saw through the eyes of magic, because that's what a child sees. It's magical. And you felt powerful and possible all at the same time. And then we learned to be ordinary. Masking our greatness many times over the course of our lives. Dismissing our brilliance as if everyone has the same kind of brilliance coming through them as you do. Dumbing down just to be accepted. And the interesting thing is that when we live in the fullness of our greatness, our contribution resonates even further. We think it's our contribution that's going to define our greatness. Actually, our greatness is going to inform and expand our contribution when we're living in it. So this week in particular, what I'm asking, calling for, inviting you to experience is that if for some moment in time you can put the question of whether or not there is greatness inside you to rest, put it aside, or if you can subtract it, the frictors around it, then do so, but put it aside and make the assumption that greatness is already present, waiting to be expressed from you, through you, and into the world as part of the unique contribution of you. And live from that. And see what happens. And it may not be dramatic. But it might just be the lighting up in somebody's eyes of something you've said that you think is relatively inconsequential. It's almost the reverse of that old nursery rhyme. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. Well, let's flip it a little bit. If what your action was or the presence of you was the nail, for the presence of the nail, the shoe was saved. For the presence of the shoe, the horse ran on. For the presence of the horse, the rider could fight. For the presence of the rider, the battle was won. And I also strongly recommend that you spend at least a half an hour playing the It's a Wonderful Life game. See whose lives would be different if you were not there. And then come back and see if you can tell me that you don't matter. some friend you helped with their homework, some kid whose shoe you tied, some person you gave or shared some food with. It could be any number of things. Through the passage of time, each and every small action expands exponentially in terms of its impact and resonance. So, anything anyone have to say here at close? That will complete, yes, go ahead. It will complete this day for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. Have a great week. And let's see what happens next week as we complete at least this series of conversations. Bye, all.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Michael.